Hello and welcome to Justice Losers, the most unqualified podcast talking entertainment news and reviews. I'm Rose Preston, joined as always by my delightful co-host.
Matt. Hey, that went nice and smooth.
It did. Again, like I said, the rust is all knocked off. Matt, what should people do?
People should like, people should subscribe, and people should tell their friends.
Tell them that we're back!
We're back.
We're doing things. Like we said last time, not super consistently, just when we can find the time, because again, we are fully grown adults with families and jobs. So yeah, we'll keep an eye out, specifically keep on the Twitter. The Twitter has an automated tweet for when a video gets posted. So follow our X, sorry.
I was going to jump in and correct you, but you beat me to it.
Stupid. Follow that and you'll get notified when we release something. We haven't even discussed with Gage if we're going to like have a specific day we release on. It's just gonna be when he gets it done.
Yep, that's okay. We provide high enough quality content that people will want to follow us anyway. No matter when it comes out,
quality,
they'll be begging,
not quantity,
for our scraps.
Yep.
I also do want to clarify, follow our ex, not your ex on X, because if you follow your ex on X, that just leads to a whole awkward situation.
A lot of drama comes from that. Matt, oh, we're doing news. We're not doing what you've been up to. That's
we'll do a big catch up at some point. But
I brushed too much of the rust off that I about went into our normal pattern. So what's been going on? I assume we're not going to really discuss much of the stuff that's happened while we were gone, because that's not news anymore, unless there's any major stuff we want to comment on. But pretty much everything's like the writer's strike is so far gone that there's nothing new we can add to the conversation.
I think there's not much big stuff that we need to go back and acknowledge. The only thing that I did want to catch from like the past 8 months is like immediately after we recorded our last episode, like that next week, Cormac McCarthy died, which made me sad.
Who's that?
He wrote No Country for Old Men and The Road and All the Pretty Horses and a bunch of popular books. And
I hear Aurora in the background.
That's not my cat. Oh. My cat's Jasmine.
Jasmine. Oh, God. Too many cats with my friends. I hear Jasmine in the background.
Jasmine, are you yelling? Jasmine, I'm trying to record. Please be considerate.
You'll probably start hearing Apollo barking at some point.
I'm sure.
Well, that's a bummer.
Yeah. I don't know. I just wanted to acknowledge that.
Yep. Well, what's relevant? Hit me with some newses.
Well, we were having an interesting discussion prior to starting recording about Rebel Moon Part 2, The Scar Giver, which I know is really the top of mind for a lot of people in the pop culture space right now. So we could have that discussion briefly and then get into some actual stuff.
I feel like we can harken back to the old Secret Life of Pets joke, the infamous Matt F-bomb that I still don't know if it was actually kept in the episode. But yeah, who needed a second one? Who needed a first one? our conversation, I was just basically like, when are people going to stop giving J.J. Abrams, not J.J. Abrams, who is that guy?
I'm going to let you dangle till you figure it out.
God,
I know full well it is.
Because he's the one who did the DZ stuff.
He did the Justice League and had his Justice own special 4-hour cut with an like
Zack Snyder.
Song.
God,
that's the one.
J.J. Abrams and Zack Snyder are you know how like I have pairing celebrities, like when I learn about two at the same time? Those are the two that pair together all the time, like the nerdy ones that James Gunn too. Actually, it's kind of a three, like all three of them are like the very nerdy, really big in the comic book and with varying success.
I'd read that fan fiction.
The three of them together, a buddy comedy. Yeah, no, when are people going to stop giving Zack Snyder attention? He just makes me mad.
My counterpoint was that, I mean, it's the market forces at work. Like, if he makes enough bad stuff that people stop watching, which he's presumably got a bit of runway because he's made a lot of money and had a lot of successes in the past. Quality, a little more arguable. I think 300 is a pretty good movie. I think Watchmen is probably better than its reputation.
Yeah. Well, that's what we've discussed at length, that like he's good at adapting existing material, because 300 and Watchmen are both good graphic novels. and he just adapted that material. Superman was fine, but like it was the issue that I feel like he learned the wrong lesson with it, where it was fine, and what was good about what was arguably good about it was that it was like a fresh take on a undebatedly optimistic character, like universally optimistic, and so they he took like a darker approach to it, and like it was like, oh, okay, that was like an interesting spin on it, and then he just went with that and it just didn't work for the rest of the franchise. And then I feel like he's the bad version of Christopher Nolan's whole like, I'm trying to make a spectacle, because all of his slow-mo and CGI and stuff like that, you get your big gray monsters obscured by smoke and fire and debris, but like he doesn't ever try to make an interesting story, where Christopher Nolan does try to make an interesting story. And so it's just, you know, he's just not I don't know, he's not a good writer, he's not a good creator.
Largely agree with you. Denis Villeneuve had some interesting remarks in advance of Dune 2 coming out a couple of weeks ago, where he was talking about he hates dialogue in movies. He thinks that dialogue is for the stage and for the small screen, and that the big appeal of movies and the thing that sets them apart from any other art form is the visual spectacle, the grandiosity of it. You can convey these wild impressions through things like performance and cinematography and visual effects and things like that. And I think Zack Snyder has that same philosophy. He just doesn't have the execution.
Right. I also feel like there's, I got to go back, and I don't really want to, but I feel like if I wanted to have evidence to this point, I need to. I feel like there's this whole kind of trend going around right now, this commentary on people's media literacy. Specifically, it's becoming a big thing on TikTok right now surrounding Dune, because people who watch the movie still think Paul is the good guy. And that's kind of the point. Like, people aren't growing, like, kids aren't growing up now with critical reading skills where they can identify that just because you have the character who's the point of view character doesn't mean that they are the good guy. Doesn't mean they are necessarily the protagonist of the story. And so people are walking away from Dune 2 saying like, oh, Paul's the hero. And the whole point, like I'd mentioned in the review last time, that the edit of the Dune and Dune Messiah cover where it was Paul's the bad guy, and then the Dune Messiah cover is "in case I wasn't clear." And like, we know that Denis Villeneuve intentionally tried to make that a bit clearer in the movie, and people still didn't get it.
It's kind of amazing to me, because like, the book is not subtle about it.
Right.
I could see if you're not reading carefully, you could miss the point that it's building him up to be a villain, at least the initial book. And then Messiah is very much just like laying it out.
Yep.
But the movie was like, oh my goodness. Like, exactly. He's wearing dark robes with a hood and shouting at people and getting a hard on for atomic weapons. Like, this is not the good guy. This should be really obvious. Okay, that's fascinating.
Yeah, no, it's been interesting to watch that happen, that kind of conversation about that. But the reason I bring that up in the context of Zack Snyder is I feel like this is going to sound so pretentious. He plays to the lack of media literacy, where there's not nuance or subtlety to what he does. And so that's why people like us who watch for things that are harder to find. Oh God, this sounds so pretentious.
Lean into it.
Things that are You're harder right, to find in movies. Like, he doesn't do that. And so we don't enjoy his stuff as much, but people do. I saw people on TikTok being like, yeah, Rebel Moon was a fun movie to watch. And I'm like, I can't imagine that it is. And like,
wouldn't be for me.
People love the Zack Snyder's cut of stuff. People love a lot of what he did with DC, but like, we don't. And so that's kind of the market isn't, we're not the market. The market is the casual viewer who just wants to go and have a fun time.
Yeah, to reiterate a point I made 15 minutes ago when we were talking off air, if Zack Snyder is going to be defeated, I don't know why I'm choosing the word defeated there, but...
Because he is the villain. He is the villain of our... we've said it a long time, enemy of the show. Oh no, that's Rob Liefeld.
That's Rob Liefeld.
We have two enemies of the show. We can have two bad guys. All the Christopher Nolan Batman trilogy had two bad guys for every movie.
Exactly. Yeah. But if Zack Snyder's to be defeated, it is going to be the market forces that do it. The difficulty, as you're pointing out, is that we don't live in a market for art. We live in a market for entertainment, and that's a very different thing.
Well, and like that's the, like there is, I think the thing about movies is that there's two movie industries. There is the artsy market, and then there is the entertainment market. And it's the bit, I mean, I feel like this is kind of a culmination of this, me saying this is a culmination of things we've touched on a lot, that there is the ever spreading divide between the casual viewer and the critics. And so you get Oscar movies where you don't get like the Lord of the Rings, Return of the King kind of things, where it is just like a widely watched movie. You're getting things like, I always think of like Shape of Water, like such a, like three built like the, those from like, what was that? 2015, 2016, late teens,
2017.
Yeah.
I think
so, like the late teens and like now these early 20s, like the movies that are being nominated for arts, for Oscars, with the exception of the one category that's like the blockbuster one where they just stick in all the casuals, like that, I feel like exemplifies that separation of the two markets of the movie industry. So like you have Zack Snyder who just dwells in this, the casual moviegoer, like I'm gonna make big spectacles that take very little brain power to comprehend. And then you have Yorgos Lanthimos and whatever the fuck he's working on at any given moment. And you have the people that bridge the gap, like Denis Villeneuve and Christopher Nolan, who can make big spectacles that you don't really need to dissect to enjoy, but there is more to it. But I think that there is, because there's so much of a market of casual moviegoer, that's the market that Zack Snyder lives in. And so he's going to continue to get just funneled millions of dollars by Netflix and Disney, probably not Disney for right now because he's a Warner Brother lackey right now, Warner Brothers and Warner Discovery. He'll keep getting money to just make their big cash cow things. And then other people will be worried about making the movies that are good and get good reviews and can kind of like balance out the review bombing that happens for Zack Snyder so that Warner Brothers can look at their plate of movies and say, we have an average of good movies because we have the bad ones and the great ones. That's kind of like where I feel like we're at with movies these days. And that's why you get a lot of discourse between people like us who want to dissect movies and read all of them between the lines. Kaylin and I just watched Good Will Hunting last night, and I was noticing when the camera was breaking the plane to change the how the conversation was shifting between the two of them leading the conversation, keeping the rule of 180, but like when someone would make a line and it would go around the back of their head, like I was noticing those things and like the cinematography and the careful writing and stuff. There's no way Kaylin was paying attention to that because that's not what she wants to watch movies for. And so like that divide in who watches for what is becoming bigger and bigger. And so there is two markets. Man.
All right. That's a good point. I'm going to push back on it a little bit though. I don't think it's so much that the market is separating into the artsy fartsy stuff and the entertainment stuff, the lowbrow stuff. I think it's that the spectrum is broadening. So you're getting more of just the pure junk food, Fast and Furious 16 or whatever we're on at this point, Zack Snyderisms. Marvel is really kind of going down that route right now where it's just, it's cheap, it's
formulaic,
uninventive visually, but it'll bring in some money, it'll entertain some people.
Yep.
And then you do have the more artsy stuff, the independent stuff. There's honestly a much bigger market for that than there ever has been in the past. It's actually a lot easier to make those sorts of movies than it ever has been, just because there's so much money in the industry generally. That's so true. We're really living in a good period for independent movies. They sometimes get crowded out in terms of like headlines and sort of broader attention. But a lot of them are getting made, a lot of them are getting money, and a lot of them are just succeeding in kind of their own little way. But then we have stuff filling in the middle. You're talking about the Oscars, but Dune, the first one, did pretty well at the Oscars.
Oppenheimer. Barbie.
Oppenheimer's a billion-dollar movie, and it cleaned up at the Oscars. That's a perfect blend of,
that's true,
this is a popular movie that people want to see, and also a movie that checks some of those highbrow critical boxes. So I don't think it's a separation as much as just stretching out that spectrum a little further.
Gotcha.
I want to throw in a second point. Well, really more of a question. I don't actually really know how Netflix does this, but with Zack Snyder, how much does it obfuscate a movie's successes or failures if it's on streaming? Because, you know, like a normal Oppenheimer movie, we say, oh, it made $1 billion. Mm-hmm. It's a global smash success.
Right.
Great. Rebel Moon comes out on Netflix, and you can get some measures of how many people watch it, but I feel like it's much harder to measure. There's more variables into like what movies people are choosing to watch, whether they're watching the whole thing. I feel like it's a lot harder to quantify. And I wonder if that does dilute some of those market forces a little bit.
Mm.
Movies going straight to streaming.
I feel like I can relatively clearly answer that question, because I work in the data world now.
All right. Hit me.
You'd be surprised how much data they can accumulate from their streaming platform. So they can get everything as granular as like who, well, so for every view, there is there's likely a multiplier of how many people actually watched it. So it probably, if I had to guess, it'd be between 1 and 2. So let's say 1.5. Mm-hmm. So for every view, that's likely a person and a half watched that, because mm-hmm. one person watched it once and then two people watched it another time. And so mm-hmm. they have a clear idea of, generally clear idea of who watched it, how many people watched it. They have an idea of, because of algorithms, what kinds of people watch it. They know how long people watched it, how many times they watched it, obviously. They can also measure based on releases and based on trailer data who signed up for Netflix to watch it. That's something that a lot of people, that they report a lot on with Stranger Things. People would cancel their Netflix accounts, and then when the next season of Stranger Things came out, people would start their account again. And so you can have a really clear idea of like who's going in to intent. So with that one, Netflix is making a lot of money on Stranger Things, because people are straight up paying money to start an account to watch specifically Stranger Things. And so you have that stuff. And then you also have just like review, like surveys that they release. You'll notice, I'll notice randomly on TikTok that there will be like, I'll just swipe through a video, and then instead of going to the next video, it'll pop up with a little survey and be like, did you enjoy this video? Or like, how appropriate was this video for the platform and stuff like that? So like little things mm-hmm. like that, people answer, and you get like with millions of people watching, you only need a couple thousand people to review something like that to get a clear idea. People liking, like casual people really like, and there's the I like this thumbs up, and then there's the I love this two thumbs up and stuff down, those thumbs down. So you get that data from people. You also have, so let's say a given household, how many things that they watch, how much money they pay for the platform, how much money are they essentially giving to that movie? So if a household watches 3 things on Netflix a month, and let's for simplicity say it's $15 a month, it's essentially that viewer is paying $5 to watch the movie. And so you can kind of calculate all of that data to basically make it like, how much money is this movie making? With, and there's probably metrics and stuff that they have that I don't even know, because I never worked in the streaming industry, that would make that number even clearer. And so they probably have a solid number to say, this is successful. This is how much money this thing has made us. Is it worth it to do another thing? There's also the overhead value of having original things that they can't watch anywhere else. So having, sure. it's, since Rebel Moon is just a Netflix original thing, they know that that has a increased value to them over something like, because it's relevant to me, Good Will Hunting, which can move between services depending on contract. It also doesn't cost them money to have a contract, so they add that. They don't have to subtract that expense from the profits they make from any given original. So they have a lot of tools at their disposal, and certainly even more than I know of, to make that obvious for them.
Okay. Good answer.
Data.
I like it.
I like data. I'm actually working on becoming a data power user at my job right now, so I can hit you with data all the time.
Very good. Lovely. All right, I think that's probably entirely too much time talking about Zack Snyder.
Any amount of time is too much time spent talking about Zack Snyder.
Let's talk about Aaron Taylor Johnson, or should I say Aaron Taylor Bondson?
Oh, really?
I don't know if it's officially confirmed, But
Pierce Brosnan Rex. Oh,
yeah, he is almost certainly going to be the next James Bond.
Interesting. Man, they're really sticking to the action James Bond, aren't they?
I mean, do they have a choice?
I don't know. I would be interested in seeing it. When's the last time we got just like the spy with an occasional like couple punches or a gunshot James Bond? Like Daniel Craig is obviously just like the action hero James Bond. Who was the one before him? Is that Pierce Brosnan? Wasn't super hero like action packed, was he?
Yeah, those were pretty action heavy movies too.
So the reason I say this is when I went to see No Time to Die, I saw it with Kayla, my wife, and her grandfather, who was a huge James Bond fan before. Like, he loved all of the old James Bond stuff. And he, when we walked out of the theater, was angry about how, well, they killed James Bond. But
spoilers
also that...
for a four-year-old movie.
Exactly. But also just, like, that he didn't like the action-packed James Bond. He wanted the smooth, suave, gentleman James Bond. And, I mean,
I think you could argue Casino Royale kind of checks a lot of those boxes.
I haven't seen Casino Royale. So this is me coming from having seen Spectre and... what's the other one?
Skyfall?
Skyfall, yeah. So seeing those two a while ago and then having seen No Time to Die, that's my... Well, I also saw like the old ones. I tried to make it through all of them, and I got through the first like four. So I saw Dr. No, Octopussy, like the really old ones. But so I don't have the middle area, and then I don't have early Daniel Craig, which I guess would just be the one movie.
Everyone forgets about Quantum of Solace.
Oh, two movies. Exactly.
That one frustrates me. I've done this before, but I'm gonna go off on a brief tangent. Quantum of Solace is so close to being a really good movie. Like, Casino Royale is really good. Core concept is very interesting for Quantum of Solace, but it just got butchered by the writer's strike. There's no coherent script, and it's a mess of non-pacing and discontinuities.
Is it worse than shooting a giant arrow off your kid's shoulder into a monologuing behemoth dragon?
No, I mean, objectively, it's not a bad movie. It's toward the bottom of the James Bond heap, I think, but there's a lot of things that go right.
Gotcha.
It's just a big disappointment because it's such a missed opportunity.
Right. But yeah, I mean, you know what my favorite genre is. Like, I love espionage stuff. Mm-hmm. And that's something that I would like to see from James Bond, who is the, like, when you ask someone to name a spy in entertainment, 99% of the time they're going to say James Bond, because there's really no other just like household spy name. And so, like, not necessarily just like make it a full, you know, Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy, like Le Carre level spy thing that's just talking in a room the whole time, but have it be a little bit more intelligence based. Like, instead of just he's told to go somewhere and do something and like kill a person, because he just became an assassin basically at the end of Daniel Craig's tenure. And so, like, I mean, Aaron Taylor Johnson, Bullet Train, kick ass, his brief stint as Quicksilver, they're definitely sticking with Action Star. And so they're going to be leaning more into that. It's also owned by Amazon, so who knows how wrong this is going to go. Amazon did Night Manager, which is another Le Carre book.
That's true.
So, you know,
they
against my point with Tom Hiddleston, who is kind of action starry right now because of Marvel.
Yes, but let's not lock him into the action star box. And honestly,
a lot more to do before Marvel. He's just been stuck in Marvel lately.
Yeah, and like, I think Aaron Taylor Johnson similarly has gotten good billing as an action star because he's a big handsome man with a big handsome face and
that's fair.
Like a good physical posture and whatnot. Mm-hmm. Think of like Tenet. You can't understand a word the man says because he's got like a breathing mask on the whole time.
But he's in Tenet? Like
he's in Tenet.
I did not know that.
He's got a beret. He's
probably
going to
be on a mask.
Oh. Yeah,
he's one of those faces. He's like, as weirdly big, like prominent as he is, he kind of has a forgettable face. He's kind of like a mix between about five different actors. He kind of looked like Jake Gyllenhaal in Age of Ultron. Like, I straight up thought, no, not Jake. Was it Jake Gyllenhaal? I think it was Jake Gyllenhaal. I straight up thought that was him the first time I watched the movie before I actually like really understood people's faces. Wild. Yeah, no, he is Kraven. Okay, I knew he was in Kraven, but I couldn't remember if he was actually Kraven because I pay so little attention to Marvel now. He is, Outlaw King. Yeah. Godzilla.
Yeah.
Damn, he's really everywhere.
Yeah.
Nosferatu. He's Harding. He's going to be Harding in the Nosferatu movie.
Oh, nice.
You know who Harding is, right? He's the guy. He's the main guy.
He's the what's his face analog?
The
Harker?
Harker, yes. Harker.
Yep.
Jonathan Harker. Yep. Friedrich Harding.
Is that that's Robert Eggers is doing the Nosferatu, right?
Yes.
Very cool. That's going to be cool.
Yeah. I'm very interested having read Dracula now, like having actually like read the book and now knowing because of the vampire episode, knowing so much about specifically Dracula. I'm very interested to see how this movie goes.
Yeah. What was I saying about James Bond? Oh, the espionage stuff. Yeah. So Casino Royale definitely has some action scenes, but it also does play a lot into the suavity, suaveness. Does play a lot into the suavaciousness of James Bond. You know, he's just slouching around the casino, making martini orders and stuff like that. It is a really solid movie. But aside from that, you'd probably have to go back to some of the early Connery ones, honestly, to get the really espionage heavy ones. Like I'm thinking From Russia with Love. Doesn't really feel like a James Bond movie. It's a great movie, but it's just like he's just in here seducing enemy agents and breaking in to try to steal a little code machine. The big action scene at the end is like a small bomb is set off and there's smoke everywhere. Maybe fires a couple of shots. It's really low intensity, but it's pretty solid movie. So one option that has been batted around the pop culture circles has been, we don't really have a great way to further progress James Bond. He's sort of maximized his action hero, wild gadgets, smart blood, nanobots, sci-fi nonsense at this point. What if we rein it back in and go period piece? Go back to some of the Cold War intrigue and espionage that made the character so interesting and relevant originally.
Yeah.
Strip things back, go back to its roots.
Because they're not... When's the last time they did a book? Because, Dr. No and From Russia with Love are, the books, right?
Yeah.
But, lately they've just been, taking characters and generals, because, I know Spectre is in the books, right?
Yeah.
But it's not a book. And so they're kind of loosely adapting organizations and characters into original scripts.
Yeah. Casino Royale was based at least somewhat authentically on the book. Quantum of Solace was the title of a short story that was Yeah.
Are there any books? Did they do all the major books?
I think they did all the major books. I have not read all of the major books, but I've read several of them.
Gotcha.
There's enough material that they can mine it either for going back and adapting something that hasn't been adapted or just taking a lot of inspiration from how things have been done.
Or just redo one of the ones that have been adapted because that's the world we're in these days. Just reboots.
Yeah. But no, I think Aaron Taylor Johnson, I think he'll make a good Bond. I think he definitely has the action chops, when they start throwing him into the action stuff. But he's got that calm and that poise to him that will serve him well in the quieter scenes.
Gotcha. Okay. What else?
It's been a little while, but I guess we talked Deadpool 3 trailer.
Did you see the recent news about Deadpool 3?
I did not see the recent news about Deadpool
3. It is no longer Deadpool 3. It is now Deadpool Wolverine. Deadpool and Wolverine.
Right.
Let's see. I think they changed a couple things. Because it's I think it's not going to be a sequel of Deadpool 2. I'm wondering who made that decision.
I kind of thought that was always the plan, but Yes, maybe I don't know for sure.
I don't know. But that was news, you know, just renaming it from Deadpool 3 to Deadpool and Wolverine. Yeah, I mean, am I going to watch it? Who knows?
I have pretty aggressively given up on Marvel at this point, but yeah, you know.
That's what happens when you just do too much. So Deadpool, anything you want to talk about it?
It's happening. Yep. I mean, we have very little information on how the entire picture is going to come together. But the trailer at least felt like a Deadpool movie, which I think is a promising sign for something that I think a lot of people were worried about how it was going to come under the Disney umbrella. But yeah, yep. We got some fourth wall breaks. We got some jokes. We got Wolverine.
Yep.
So I may check it out. I thoroughly enjoyed the first two Deadpools. Mm-hmm. And I guess if I'm going to keep my finger on the pulse of anything Marvel, that might be the thing I'll do it with.
Yeah. Did you ever watch the second season? You watched the second season of Loki, didn't you?
We started it and did not finish it because it was just a slog.
Oh, that's right. You said it felt like it was written by an AI.
Yeah. Like, the plot points kind of work. A lot of the scenes kind of work on some level, but it's just there's no cohesion to it. I apparently the ending gets kind of wild, but I don't have much interest in going back and finishing it at this point.
Yep. What else?
House of the Dragon coming soon.
That is coming soon.
We got dueling trailers for that just this past week.
Yep. Did not watch them. Anything? So you've read the thing that this is based on, right?
I have. Yep. The two chapters of Fire and Blood.
Yep. Based on the trailers, thoughts?
I mean, the trailers give away very little plot-wise. The first season hewed pretty closely to what we knew from Fire and Blood. It filled in, I mean, again, it is like two chapters of Fire and Blood, which is written as a history and not as a story. But I think it fills those in admirably. Probably 90% of the decisions for filling in the cracks and fluffing out the backstory work, and probably 10% of them, I'm thinking foot fetish in particular, are a little strange. but overall, I think it worked pretty well. This one, you can see some of the elements that'll come back from the book. It looks like it's going to be a lot more action heavy, which I think we kind of deserve. Like the first season, there's a lot to like about that first season. I think there's a good argument that it does feel like a lot of setup with the time jump, and they had to shoehorn in some action with the crab feeder early on, just because it was going to be a lot of just getting to know these characters and all their intricate machinations and all set up. So this one, we're going to get into the actual proper war, dragon on dragon violence, which is what we've been building to. And I think what we need from this, I hope they don't completely relax away from some of the good sitting and talking, because still, I think my favorite episode of the entire show was the third one. I think it was the third one, the one where the king and his retinue go to the hunting lodge and they're hunting for the white stag in the woods. Mm-hmm. And Rhaenyra runs away. Just so much good character work and cinematography in that one. Not a lot of action, but it felt like it worked really beautifully. And I hope they don't stray away from that too much. Still a lot of good things to hit. If I remember from the book, this is going to get really dark. Like, as you've said about Last of Us Season 1, the first season was the light one.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, there's going to be some pretty horrifying things coming pretty quickly. So we got that to look forward to.
Love it.
Yeah.
When's Rings of Power Season 2 coming out?
I think also this summer. We don't have...
It's released in 2024.
Yeah, we don't have any kind of promotional material for it, which I think that's just kind of the direction things are going now. You know, Marvel is only really doing trailers like 2 or 3 months out. Star Wars kind of the same thing. So it seems like largely that's what these big name properties are doing. They
freaking
trust that.
Good, because I was sick of that. I think it was Batman versus Superman was the worst of it. They were like, had trailers out like a year and a half in advance.
I think it was close to 2 years. Yeah. They're trusting their name recognition, I think, and the power of the brand, which again, they can. We talked about this. The market forces are still aligning for them to continue their reign at the top of entertainment. But yeah, Rings of Power. We'll see. We'll see.
Like I said, it was an entirely fun thing to watch. Critically, issues, but I just, it was fun.
Yeah, I described it to my cousin afterwards that I really enjoyed it while I was watching it, but thinking about it afterwards, the plot was kind of nothing, and I didn't really like any of the characters, and the music was pretty unmemorable, and the visuals were just fine. But again, like while I was watching it, it kind of worked. So we'll see. We've also got War of the Rohirrim to look forward to at some point this year.
Oh, yeah. That's not animated, is it?
It is animated.
Okay.
Yeah. So I'm intrigued to see how that'll go. I could imagine it being a bit of a nothing, but I could imagine it also being... This is going to set up too high expectations for it, but it kind of feels like it could occupy that Andor space where like it's far enough removed from stuff that we really already are invested in, the sort of big wheels of the world kind of stuff, that they can actually just take the time and create a good story and tell a good story within this world. We'll see if it comes together. I imagine it'll be fine. I'd be a little surprised if it's more than fine, but I'll leave that door open for seeing how it could actually really pull together nicely.
Yep. What else?
We've discussed many times before how we feel about sort of first screenings and first reactions and stuff like that.
Yep.
Let me just read you a couple of highlights from an article here describing some first reactions to a movie. I won't tell you what the movie is yet. This is from a Screen Rant article, but, quote, the reactions outside the theater were primarily of general bewilderment. One attendee told him that the film had, quote, zero commercial prospects and that it is unflinching in how bat poop insane it is. The film was described as a mix of Ayn Rand, Metropolis, and Caligula.
Jesus. That's giving, like, Godzilla and Kong... Because that's coming out soon, isn't it? I'm trying to think of movies that are coming out soon.
That's out. It's not doing great at the box office, and the critics are kind of like, yeah, this is worn its welcome a little thin at this point. No, that wouldn't make much sense, I think, for
Frozen
Godzilla
2. Craven? Because I'm trying to think blockbusters.
It's okay. Not quite a blockbuster. It has more than $100 million budget, but I don't know if I'd call it a blockbuster per se.
Is it something I'm looking forward to, or at least...
I'll give it away. What would you... How badly would you want to see a movie based on those reactions?
I wouldn't want to spend money to go see it in the theater, but I'd definitely be interested to see how that reaction came about when it comes onto a streaming service.
I kind of want to see this opening night, because that's just a fascinating test screening reaction right there. That's Megalopolis, Francis Ford Coppola's next movie.
Oh.
So the premise is Adam Driver stars as an architect who wants to rebuild New York City after some natural disaster has wiped it out, or at least heavily damaged it, wants to rebuild it as a utopia.
Hmm.
That's about all we know about it. He self-financed it, and it's got like a $100-some million budget. And I am just... This feels like the sort of movie that's going to go down in legend for one reason or another.
Yeah. I was not expecting Francis Ford Coppola to have that reaction, or for a reaction to be for one of his movies. Interesting.
Well, he doesn't have a perfect track record. What is it, the Island of Dr. Moreau that was, he made a really terrible one?
Bram Stoker's Dracula. That, which one is, who's in that one?
I'm getting that mixed up. Island of Dr. Moreau is Marlon Brando kind of going nuts.
Oh, that's the Keanu Reeves one.
Yeah.
That one was pretty good. It was pretty faithful to the book. To its own detriment, but it still stayed faithful. Did he do the first Godfather? Oh, yes. Okay, there it is. Yeah.
Yeah. The Godfather. He's Godfather boy.
I just saw Godfather now. Part 2 and Part 3, and I was
in the conversation.
Anyway.
Oh, he directed Jack.
I don't know what that is.
It's a 1996 Robin Williams movie.
Oh.
Because of an unusual disorder that has aged him 4 times faster than a typical human being, a boy looks like a 40-year-old man as he starts 5th grade at public school after being homeschooled.
Hmm.
Yep. 5.8 on IMDb, 30-something on Metacritic.
Good.
So, not a perfect track record.
Right.
There are some directors out there that I think you can go through their IMDb and find nothing but hits, but they're few and far between.
Yep. Well, that'll be interesting. I probably won't see it in theater just because I don't have much of an interest in that premise. But
neither do I, which is actually often a good sign for me. I find that there's a lot of things, especially with reading, where I'll read the premise and I'll think, oh, that sounds like a really cool premise, and I'll read it and just not be impressed.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'll hear things and I'll hear, this is really good. Here's the premise. And I'm like, I have no interest in that premise. I don't see how that could possibly work. And then I read it and I'm like, okay, that's great.
I wonder
it's
if
not
it's
a universal thing, but
since we're kind of creative minds, when we hear a premise that interests us, we set our own expectations of how the premise would be done, and we are let down because we are humans think that their own shit is better or something.
It's entirely possible.
But all right. Any other fun things?
That was kind of the big boxes I wanted to check. Still holding out hope for Andor at some point this year. Stellan Skarsgård was at one point under the impression that it was going to come out like this summer, but I'm pretty sure that's not true.
Hmm.
So we'll see. Batman 2 has finally started filming. I think they pushed it back to 2026, maybe.
Jesus. Do we know anything about it?
I think Robert Pattinson's coming back.
Well, no shit. Well, but if they're filming, who... Do we know anything about...
Maybe not even filming. Maybe it's just production stuff. No, we don't know very much at this point. The other thing I was going to say, actual news, Penguin trailer.
Oh, a new one?
Yeah. Just after the past couple days here. Check that out real quick. It's quite good.
Cool.
Yeah, right?
So we have his motivation clearly lined out. Who was that screaming?
Sophia Falcone, as played by Kristen Milioti, which I feel like I'm going to have a little bit of trouble getting around her as a villain, but, you know, we'll see.
I am so interested in this. I want to reread. Do I have it? I don't know if I have it with me. The Penguin graphic novel that was really good. Like, one of the things I loved about it was that the whole book, like, everyone's afraid of Penguin, but then the moment Batman kicks in the glass, he tells everyone to stand up and they all run away. Because I love just the fact that, like, I love having villains be their own thing for a little bit, not just the guy that gets beat up. And so this would be really cool to watch. And also, Colin Farrell is Colin Farrell, so, you know, that's going to be
apparently
that.
It's still wild that, like, they just basically created a whole new person. Like, this doesn't look like anyone. It's Colin Farrell, but inside this wild makeup.
Yep. I'm very excited. That'll be cool.
Yeah. I think that looks great.
I also, just really quickly, I'm really excited about, or I really want to watch Furiosa, but I need to watch Mad Max Fury Road first, because I love Anya Taylor-Joy. Nope, still haven't seen it.
Oh.
Our friend Carter is like, we're definitely doing that movie. Like, I'm coming over and we're watching that at some point. So I foresee seeing that sometime soon. I just got to find the day because, you know, busy. But yeah, Furiosa looks awesome. And Anya Taylor-Joy is amazing.
Second that. Yep.
All right. Anything else?
All right. I think that's the big stuff I wanted to hit.
All right. Shall we?
We shall. Thanks, everyone, for listening. You can find this fine podcast anywhere fine podcasts are sold. This is not going very well, but I'm going to lean into it. Check us out on Spotify, iTunes, iHeartRadio, Podbean, all the other places. We are on a variety of social media services, or at least we technically have an account on a variety of social media services. Check us out particularly on Twitter, as we mentioned up top, @JustUsLosersPod. That'll give you notifications of when we've got new episodes coming out. We'll be doing a big catch-up at some point in the hopefully not too distant future here. Talk about Barbenheimer, maybe touch on Mission Impossible, whatever else we've done over the intervening months.
Mm-hmm.
I finally finished Breath of the Wild. Talk about that a little bit. Good stuff. So we got that to look forward to. Keep an eye on that Twitter so you know when that drops. I think that's all the things I wanted to say. Email us ideas at justusloserspod@gmail.com, I guess. That still exists. We still receive those emails.
This will be much looser on structure. And so if there's anything you guys want us to specifically talk about, yeah, just let us know. We're not going to do as much the news and what you've been up to's. So it'll be much more loosey-goosey for a little bit.
Yep.
Indefinitely. So,
yep. That is the plan. All right. Thanks for listening. Bye.
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 Bye. We remember to do it this time.
Nailed it.